Hello, and welcome to The Squeal, PIC's Swine Management Podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. This is the final episode of our Wean to Finish Health series featuring Carthage Vet Services' Dr. Joe Connor.
This is Joe Connor.
Dr. Will Lopez, PIC's Technical Services Wean to Finish Specialist.
I'm Will Lopez here.
And PIC's Health Assurance Veterinarian, Dr. Deanne Hemker.
Deanne Hemker here.
Today, it's Q&A, a popular segment in these Squeal conversations when our guests quiz each other.
Go around the table. Any questions?
Will, I had a question for you, just with your experience in technical services and working with customer farms. We talked about the impact that stressors have on the immune system. What are the most common stressors you see in Wean to Finish that are big things that producers can target to make sure that they are doing these things correctly, to make sure that we're in balance and we're really priming the animal to have the best immune response possible by minimizing any environmental influence?
Thanks for this question. Actually, there are many things, as we know, that can influence that. One of the things, of course, is the health status or the disease challenges. But leaving that behind or leaving that a little apart and talking more in the management practices side of things, the facilities, the conditions of facilities, the pre-preparation of the barn, having a well-established placement plan or a reception plan, these kind of things are always influential, trying to minimize the multiple entries or multiple deliveries of pigs to same rooms or same specific airspace. That will also put down a little stress in the pigs that are already arriving there. They're going through a stressful, you know, situation, which is the separation from the mother, the weaning per se. So the biosecurity level is also important for what we said, minimizing introduction of lateral infections, right? Ventilation is something that is extremely important. It goes by hand with what we talked before about individual pig care or early pig care. That is something that we manage. We have a good material in the Wean to Finish technical service department. The early pig care, all those procedures to ensure the proper environment and in growing conditions for those pigs to strive, right? Being able to mount an effective immune response against infectious agents, because we know some pathogens are immunosuppressors and as well adverse growing conditions. Pen space, or let's say vital space, you know, like pig density within the barn is extremely important. Availability of nutrients, feeder space, number of drinkers that we have in a pen. There is research actually exploring this kind of things, like one versus two or three drinkers in a pen. That also that plays a role into the aggression that these pigs may show towards each other in these conditions that we're at, you know, in a new environment and adapting. So it's integral, it's a multifactorial approach in there. So,
well, give us your thoughts on wean age, relationship to weaning weight, and immunity as you think through their ability to handle some of the Wean to Finish stresses.
That's a tricky question. This is part of many discussions. And as you know, Dr. Steve Dritz, who is now part of the technical service team here at PIC, he has a lot of research on that. And we have had already several discussions. So there are mixed opinions, I think, about the weaning age. And I think it's something that we need to approach in an individual basis. It's depending on the system. There are economic considerations that also play a role into this. Production flow management, total optimal utilization of wean to finish spaces for production. These kind of things will drive the age as well. So I will think my own experience prior to PIC, as you guys remember, I just joined the team a couple months ago. So I like a medium age around 23, 24 days of age with a range no more than 26 days and no less than 21 days. That's something that I see and I feel comfortable with. But there is data out there. There is research, of course, that promotes increasing the weaning age, because that will they create a more robust pig going into the wean to finish stage of production. But as we also know, when managing some diseases or certain diseases, let's say controlling diseases or eliminating those diseases from the sow herd, sometimes we need to cut in the weaning age in order to minimize or to cut out the transmission cycle within the farrowing section within the breeding herd. So depending on the situation, which I think there are different approaches. I will put it in two universes: when there are disease or health interventions going on, and when we are in normal conditions. So of course I will be more towards having a lower or younger age at weaning when we are during a disease intervention, for the sake of cutting the transmission cycle within the farrowing room and getting rid of the disease in the breeding herd. But in normal conditions, I will be moving towards the a greater age in order to have a more robust peaks in terms of immunity, because we know immunity develops with time for these guys.
Yes, I very much in parallel, and I think it's a great example. It's an exciting industry for all of us because we continue to make changes that then drive other changes. So if I think about your comments on weaning age, then I also think about what we've done on the wean to finish side. So we've seen a movement toward more pigs per pin, so maybe 75 again to 150 per pin. For those caregivers, that older, heavier weight pig seems to be better for them. Whereas if they were in, say, a 25 head pin and had better visualization of those pigs, they were able to start and be successful with the younger weaning age. So an example of a change in one part of the chain then also influences the response we need back in the breed-to-wean herd in this case.
I have a question that I was holding for both Dr. Corner, Dr. Hemker. Is in terms of precision livestock farming, that's is something that is taking some traction now, and is talking. They talk about, you know, monitoring, more closely monitoring through video, audio, or even heat detection, cough sounds. What do you think in terms of when to finish in the current industry? How much will take us in terms of time to get to that technology implemented in most of our systems? Or if you see any value, what are your take on that kind of new way of thinking, precision livestock farming?
I'll comment first. I think we'll get there rapidly, and I think it will allow us to make better predictive interventions. I see a number of companies that are now in that field. What has somewhat been problematic in the past, at least, is getting sensors that would hold up within the environment within the building itself. But I think that the industry's getting past that. And so then as we look at the things that we might be interested in monitoring, that then increases. And if we can do that over frequently during the day, and start matching that to what we're seeing on the outcome on the health status, will be a great opportunity for us. Along the same lines, I do think that what we're learning now with COVID-19 in terms of droplet size and transmission or distance of risk may also make us rethink about things such as air exchanges within the barn, and may get us going in a different direction than what we've historically done. So as we see systems starting to collate that data, I'm comfortable that it will help us make improvements and changes.
I'd agree. I think we need to adapt technology as we have it available and integrate it into the industry. I know with some of the record monitoring of particularly like cough scores and things of that nature, there's been several studies done alongside inoculation and spatial spread studies that have shown good correlation. And so I think we can use these technologies, but it's really almost the sum of the technologies. So I don't think we can use them in a silo. So whether we use some kind of a audio monitoring, water disappearance, and some kind of, you know, temperature, I think it's really the sum of those that come together that is really valuable in any kind of a program that can interpret those and, you know, raise triggers and flags and do that real time is important. And then back to a comment that Dr. Connor had made earlier, I think it's really important, though, that we don't forget and emphasize the importance on our personnel and daily observation, because while we have those tools available and they are great, you know, it doesn't make up for having someone in those barns every day evaluating pigs and having a great animal caretaker on hand and making sure that they don't become complacent because they feel like there are other monitoring technologies in place.
I think that's a great comment and illustrates the point that if we look at monitoring individuals, so let's say we look at monitoring water consumption, that works for us really well if we have an acute episode of influenza. But if we have a chronic endemic disease, then frequently we don't detect that change. So we need to think about matching the other methods into one that would be the signals that would give us the early warnings, and that's where the combined monitoring should lead us.
I think I have mentioned in our conversation that I believe there is huge importance of having disease surveillance program and we need to finish, and it's something that I think sometimes gets overlooked. And I would like to hear your opinion, guys, as a veterinarian, as practitioners here in the U.S. Why do you think it could be important to have a disease surveillance program in the when to finish? And what are the main components in your criteria that a surveillance program should have?
Yeah, I'll tackle that first because, well, it's something that I've continued to think on and recognize that we do have a deficiency. And if you look at how we use our day-to-day, we look at the closeout data. But frequently, unless we've had individual pig diagnostics that have been taken during the growing period of that closeout, we generally don't have a way to categorize that closeout between health statuses. So as we think about then the importance, what I think most of us do today in the industry, we have and may record the health status of the pigs going in based on the health status that we understand those pigs would have had in the sow herd. So as an example, if we're monitoring processing fluids, we may also have CT values that we would carry through with grow finish data, or we might know the status of influenza in the suckling pigs. And so those pigs would be, or we might know the prevalence of mycoplasm. So we could categorize those pigs at weaning in some kind of scoring system or however we want to use. Where it falls down is, though, that we don't have an ongoing monitoring program in the wean to finish population itself. So I think what we still struggle with is what is the right surveillance that gives us value, and can we get it executed out in the barn levels or out in the barns? We certainly conveniently have it with oral fluid collections. And so how many time points along the growth period would give us a high probability of understanding the health status of that particular population? When we ourselves have tried to do that, as long as we assign someone to collect the oral fluids and we can stay on schedule, where we still have struggles is that if we leave that up to the individual caregiver, certain things override. So maybe it was supposed to be done this week when the pigs were 16 weeks of age, but it does not get done. And so I'd be interested, Dr. Hamper, your views in terms of, is that the right direction to go? And if it is, how do we get that accomplished?
Yeah, I think one thing I want to touch on, because you brought up a great point, is we have to show value in a diagnostic monitoring plan. Otherwise, it just becomes known as cost. And I think in some of the systems or customers that I've worked with, they're reluctant to implement on the wean to finish side because they feel like it's a significant cost and they have a hard time appreciating the value that we get out of it. So you always need to have a plan when you're going to take diagnostics of what are you going to do with that information. Don't get me wrong, it's nice to be knowledgeable and just know, but if it's not going to inform any kind of decision, it really is seen by the producer and customer as just a cost. And so I think you're made an excellent point about knowing how that's going to inform decisions, help you evaluate closeout information, and potentially inform future pig flow decisions that aren't just relying on what we think the sow farm health status is. To your point, I think we do have to try to get better at offering tests that are friendly for our farm staff to be able to do, but it does take some level of oversight in terms of reminding so that we get them done on certain days and they don't get forgotten or that they get handled appropriately. I also know some systems that have kind of also used specific personnel, whether that be a veterinary technician or something that is trained in that sample collection and can go to multiple sites and kind of help facilitate some of those surveillance programs. I have seen those be a value in the industry. And so, Will, to your main point, I think having a surveillance program is really important on the wean to finish side, but it's important that it's tailored to what you need to find out and what pathogens you're concerned about, which is going to be different for every system and depending on the health of the sow farm, and that you have some kind of plan or process to evaluate those and use them to make informed decisions so that it just doesn't become a database of information that they're not, you know, generating any value from.
And actually, yeah, disease surveillance should allow for timely detection of disease at different levels of the production system and should trigger an action, trigger an implementation of a control program and elimination or corrective action. So I think that's one of the most important things to get going, the surveillance concepts. We need to give purpose and real utility to what we're doing in terms of surveillance. Otherwise, it becomes an expense or a cost, and it's going to be harder for us to go in, to get the producers to pick up the ideas.
Dr. Connor, I've got a question for you based off something you had said at the beginning of our podcast, and I'm glad you brought it up, and I wanted to get your thought process on it. You mentioned how we're constantly having new technologies on the diagnostic side and identifying pathogens. My question to you is, how do we as an industry go about interpreting these new pathogens that we identify? There was PCV3, and is it a real pathogen? Is it not? And as we're starting to do whole genome sequencing and we're finding out that there are other, I don't even know if pathogens, organisms in the environment that could be potentially correlated with clinical signs, but whether or not they actually cause disease, how do we handle that as an industry to make sure that we aren't, putting intervention strategies at things that actually may not truly be a pathogen? So how do we sort through that in the industry, and what would your approach be?
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum, because about the time that I think we've got a methodology to do that, then one of these historical endemic organisms turn out to be a pathogen. And I think back through the years and remind myself that certain people said this had a high probability to be a pathogen. Just as an offshoot, one of the things that we continue to ask on the SHIT group is, how do we get better at predicting when there will be a change in the organism that would make it a pathogen? There are some models that exist that hopefully in time will give us some guidance, but then to your point, if we think back, it's still back to, do we have case definitions and case control studies and wait for the outcome to help drive us? that's a fine line, because if you think back to your point on PCV3, I think there are situations where that particular virus would be identified as a pathogen. The frequency, fortunately, seems to be quite low. It's easy to overextend your interventions until you understand what is the prevalence, the severity, and the reality of a particular virus in that example. So then I think it does fall back in my mind saying that we have to continue to get the balance between being active, so understanding if there has been a change, because about the time we get complacent and say, now if we think about the example of strep suis and say we've been not having problems with it differently, and then you get into the period of the last 2 years when you are repointed to the fact that certain strains of that organism can be quite pathogenic and quite problematic within an individual herd and then within flows. So to me, it goes back to paying attention to what's happening, but then slowing down and saying, how do we set up the case control and get the definitions right that will then hopefully allow us to assess the situation. And then lastly, people like me probably always overemphasize some of the technology that does come, because if we look at PCV2, I thought a couple years ago there was really good direction to give us an understanding of which ones were going to be pathogenic. But after 6 to 12 months of following that, we ended up saying it didn't change the understanding, it didn't change our decisions. So I think we also got to be aware of that as well.
Absolutely. I think a very valid point in terms of we need to be vigilant to utilize technology and look at what we're finding, but maybe not quick to overgeneralize or jump to conclusions. Like you said, make sure we're evaluating with case control studies to determine what the significance is of these things that we're able to identify with the new technology.
Many thanks to Carthage Vet Services' Dr. Joe Connor and PIC's Dr. Deanne Hemker and Dr. Will Lopez for their Wean to Finish Health Insights on The Squeal. You're welcome to share these podcasts widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.